Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Friday. I'm an idiot and, you know, confusing times and everything. It's what happens. Chris Sanders will not join us at 2. He's actually joining us at 1 o'clock, and I knew that, and I just messed it up, Chris. You know, I make mistakes sometimes, so I apologize for that.
Champ, you are good. How you doing, man? You got a lot going on. You got the suit. You got everything going on, man.
I know. I got so much happening. But Big Joe's on a plane headed to Nevada with MTSU. So okay. The Blue Raiders will take on the Wolfpack. So I had to be the one to once again select your song. So without further ado, here you go.
Here we go. Oh, my.
We're going old school.
That is old school. Who is that again? That's
it's Aretha Franklin.
Aretha Franklin. What movie was it in?
Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers. Come on, man. Yes. Come on, man.
You already know.
That is a classic, man. Best movie ever.
I love it. We're on a mission.
Me too. Absolutely.
Who the Big Red got tonight?
Champ, but we have Christian Brothers from, Christian Brothers. I think in Memphis, they're pretty good. They got some big physical dudes, and, you know, they coming off a tough loss against Lianza, whatever, by 1 point. So we got to come out and play some ball, man.
Yeah, well, good luck to you and the Big Red in that one tonight. So Brian Callahan just did his post-practice talk with the media. He said that Chim Dike has earned more opportunities at receiver. He only got one target last week, but we saw him run that kickoff back for 71 yards.
Right.
And so I asked these guys, I'll ask you, does that take opportunity away from someone that may have lost it, or is this just him earning his spot?
I mean, if you just look at the game last week when they went against the Denver Broncos, if you looked at the perimeter, who was making plays on the perimeter? Nobody. I mean, you got Calvin Ridley, say it respectfully, but he dropped a couple of passes. You got DK that had a chance to make a play, but, you know, the situation happened. So I just think that it's not that somebody's doing anything wrong. I just think that you have to put a guy in there that's making plays in the perimeter. If you look at last week, what I said is, you know, Calvin Ridley was in position. He didn't make plays. He got 4 for 29. So you got to get some more playmakers on the perimeter.
With Calvin Ridley, I said to these guys too, he was on the jugs machine. He knows he messed up. He knows he's going to make
absolutely.
Those catches. You go right back to him this week, don't you?
You have to. I mean, he's a guy that can take a top off the defense. He's a guy that brings a little bit of fear in opposing defenses. So, yeah, he dropped pass. Every receiver drops pass, but it's about how you respond. Now, if we get into the situation when you're going against the Rams and he drops 2 and 3 more balls, then now you got to make a decision, okay, you know, should we give him more targets? Should we give the other guys more targets? So it's going to come down to this cat making plays because, you know, you have – to have somebody on the perimeter that scares the defense. Yeah, I know DK is okay and Elik is okay. That's great, but they're still unknown. You have Calvin really that's known that can make some plays, but you got to go out there and make them.
Chris, do you think we could see Tony Pollard get more involved in the pass catching action? He had one catch for 29 yards last week. It was a big play, but I see him as kind of a receiving back in some sorts. Do you think they should get him more involved in the offense?
Yeah, he wasn't. I know he had 1 for 29. I think this is what you do with Tony Pollard to get him some touches. Is I say you go a 10 personnel. That's 1 back, 0 tight ends, and 4 wide receivers. Flank him out to the left and let him do some speed sweeps, some things like that to get him on the perimeter for him to actually get on the outside to make some plays. But, yeah, you can introduce him. I mean, not introduce. You can have him do some plays in the passing game. But if you're doing more of that, and you're not getting the ball to the other players that are on the perimeter, basically you're saying is he's our guy and those other guys on the perimeter are not.
Speaking of explosivity, Chris, you were talking.
What is that? What?
Bless you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Words are hard. Words are very hard.
They are.
Speaking of that word, on the tight end front,
Chigakonkwo
obviously has more speed and is more subject to have an explosive play, but it looks like Gunnar Helm is kind of a safety blanket for Cam Ward. So which one going forward do you think would be more effective for Cam Ward's development?
Right, let me ask you a question. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to get into that point. If you put on the same record, what's going to happen?
The same record is going to play.
Yeah.
It's going to play. You're going to hear the same song. And the same thing with Chig is we keep hearing the same. We're putting on the same record with him. Oh, he's fast. He's big. He's strong. He can do these things. But then he gets in the game, and he's inconsistent. Now you got Gunnar Helm, a guy that's not as fast, not as nimble, but understands how to create separation and makes the play when it's called. So I would go with Gunnar because he's consistent. He can make the plays. But if you want to go with speed with Chig, that's absolutely great. But we just don't know if he's going to make the play. Look in the fourth quarter when he had a situation to make a big-time play, he comes up short by missing the football. I know the ball was, you know, a little out front of him, but if you're an impact player, you have to make that play. And I think Gunner, if Gunner was in that position, I think with his big paws and his big hands, I think he would have made that play.
Chris Sanders is with us here on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Chris, looking at the defensive side of the ball, obviously Tavondre Sweat not active for Sunday. That's going to be a big hole just missing on the defensive side of the ball. And the Rams have a pretty good passing game, but yet don't forget about Kyren Williams. How do you think that kind of compensates with the lack of Tavondre Sweat not out there on the field?
I mean, you got Stafford, who's a phenomenal quarterback. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks of all time. And if you sit back and let that guy and not get him off his spot and let him feel comfortable in the pocket, he's going to tear you apart. So I think with Sweat out, you know, I think Denard Wilson is going to have to find out to bring some pressures off the edge to make sure they get Stafford in an uncomfortable position. Look at when they played. I can't remember. I think it was in 2021. Look at how uncomfortable Stafford was. Look at how uncomfortable he was going through his reads, and he threw a pick six to Byard. You got to figure out the same situation. You got to take that same game plan that you had in 2021 where he was looking confused and bottled up and put it in this game. Because if you let Stafford go back there and make plays, you got Puka that's on the perimeter, you got Davante Adams, you got a good passing game. If he sits back there on the spot, going through his reach, he's going to pick your pot. So I think with Denard Wilson, he's got to figure out a way to create some pressure to get that guy off his spot.
Sticking on the defensive side of the ball, you look at L'Jarius Sneed, who was kind of on a pitch count last week. Going into this week with the, like we talked about already, this high-octane offense with the Rams, how do you think the Rams are approaching the, I guess, defensive secondary for the Titans?
Oh, they're going to go after it. I know that the secondary played pretty good last week. I mean, McCurry had an interception, Woods had an interception. But if I'm an offensive coordinator, I'm going after Sneed. The reason why I'm going after Sneed is, yes, you know, a couple of years ago he did okay, but he's a guy that hasn't really played a lot of football. We don't know his stamina. We don't know his speed. So as a offensive coordinator or McVay that's calling the plays, I'm going after him because you got Davante Adams that's a bigger body. You got Puka that creates separation. I'm going after him because I don't think that right now that Sneed is in game time shape. And if that's a situation, I'm going after Sneed all day long. That's just the mentality that I have.
Chris Sanders is with us. We had a texter, Nevada Josh, bringing up that I wish Ward would stop running so far back. We did kind of see him up in the pocket quite a bit last week because he was trying to get away from the pass rush.
Right,
is that
right.
Something that just comes as the game slows down for him?
Yeah, it does, but you can't do what you do in college. In college, you can kind of get away with that. You can kind of, you know, backpedal and kind of freelance a little bit. But you got to remember, when you're in the league, people are faster. You got Zach from the Denver Broncos that was consistently in his face. You had defenses that are consistently faster. So he's just got to be conscious. Yes, you want Cam Ward to be Cam Ward, but you still got to play in the context of what you're doing. Yes, you want to scramble this and that, but if you lose ground, you got to figure it out as a quarterback. I got to throw the ball away. I got a time clock going on. I got to make sure that I don't put us in third and long, and then now we have a situation to where we're in trouble.
One thing that has come out of practice is L'Jarius Sneed said he's been trying to counsel Jarvis Brownlee on some of the penalties and you know, working with the refs. I mean, how much does that happen with a veteran player and a young player at the same position group on how to kind of combat some of those things?
Yeah, you do that. I remember when I played with the Titans/Orders, there was a guy named Chris Dishman, and he was the coach of that defense. I mean, if guys are making mistakes or a defensive back is not doing the right technique, he's coaching them and walking them through it. And that's just the veteran guy that Sneed is he understands, okay, I've been in this situation. I'm an aggressive corner. I'm trying to choke people with the line of scrimmage. So let me tell you how to get away with things so you don't get the penalty. So that's just the leadership of a veteran guy to say, okay, you know what? I understand you're frustrated. I understand you're aggressive. But here's some skills and here's some things that you can use to where you don't make those bad penalties again. So I love the aggressiveness, but it's just some of the things you can get away with and not get away with.
Brian Callahan said to the reporters, TD put it out there, Tavondre Sweat didn't get enough practice wise to get going and come back this week. That concerns me.
It does, but see, that was the situation that he had when he was coming out of Texas. He makes plays, he makes special plays, but can he stay healthy? Can he handle, you know, the rigorous 17 games during the season? Because we're in, no disrespect, but we're in the second game and you're out. I mean, and then we're in the preseason, you're out sitting on the sidelines. I'm not saying – is something he can handle. I mean, injuries happen, but we always talk about if you're going to be an impact player in this league, you've got to be available. You understand, you know, the injuries, but he's got to figure out a way to say, you know what, I understand that I'm hurt, but I need to be in the field, because if you're not available, they're going to get you out of here.
Chris, appreciate it as always. We're looking forward to Sunday down at JBJ's. Yes, you, Big Joe, and D-Mace.
I can't wait, man.
Should be a lot of fun. Good luck tonight in high school football with the Big Red.
Hey, appreciate it. You still got to wear that jersey from FRA. Y'all got away with one.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what happens, man. That's what happens.
But, man, y'all have a good one. Love y'all, brothers.
You too. Appreciate it, Chris. Chris Sanders joining us here on the program. Now, when we come back, we'll get into some college football, leading into Trey Wallace at the bottom of the hour. It's Jason Big Joe with Connor and Nick today here on 102.5 The Game. Well, this weekend, Vols fans and Vandy fans are hoping that they yell, "It's clobbering time," as they take on their respective opponents up in Knoxville. Game day is going to be there. The Bulldogs come to town, the Vols and Georgia. I'm just going to say it right off the bat. I think Tennessee wins. I think that Josh Heupel finally gets his first win over Georgia.
Maybe this is some big blue homerism coming at you.
Probably.
I think we're overestimating Tennessee here.
You think you're saying that they're
I think
overhyped?
Yes.
Overhypled?
Ah, good one. I think, granted, we are in Vol country, and you're on Vol Twitter every day. Maybe not by choice. But I think we are overhyping the Volunteers. They haven't been tested yet, and neither has Georgia. I understand, but Georgia comes with a lot more talent and a lot more experience than Tennessee does, and I think they have a quarterback that they've had in that system for a while, and I think they're just better. Paper to paper, if we're comparing the two rosters, I think Georgia is just better. And I understand you have factors that go into this, like it's in Neyland, and you're going to have a home orange crowd cheering on the Vols. This isn't something Georgia's unfamiliar with.
The line's only 3.5, though.
Yeah, I mean, I have a gut feeling, and Frazier and I talk about gut feelings all the time. Gut feeling means either you feel something's going to happen or you're hungry, and maybe I'm hungry.
Or there's a bowel movement.
Or a bowel movement, if you have IBS.
That cow I had last night, had that right before the milking started, so that was good.
So did you smell it the whole time?
It almost landed on me. Then I almost got, we haven't even talked about that. Then I almost got my face kicked off, so that was great.
Oh, don't touch it there.
Yeah, I mean, I had to. I was.
It's ticklish.
Yeah, I guess.
it's a touchy.
It's a family show.
It's a touchy subject.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, continue.
No, I just think that this isn't unfamiliar territory for Georgia. Georgia's gone in. I mean, they went into Alabama last year and got their brakes blown off, but they've done it before where they've gone into LSU or Clemson or somewhere like that, and they've walked out with a win unscathed. I just don't think this is unfamiliar territory for them, and I think if you compare the defenses, the defense of Georgia is going to have a lot easier of a time getting to the quarterback for Tennessee than Tennessee is going to have getting to Georgia's quarterback. If you compare apples to apples, and this is all on paper, obviously Tennessee could very well go out tomorrow and get a win. But if you're comparing it right now, I think Georgia has the better team, and I think Georgia is going to come away with the win.
Yeah, I look at this Georgia team as probably one of the more vulnerable Georgia teams as of, you know, the last couple of seasons.
Agreed.
And I think Connor makes a great point about that, because this is a Georgia team that probably will take care of business. I'm on the side that Georgia – I just think this whole entire year, Kirby Smart, I know it's earlier on in the season, but Kirby Smart, I don't think cares about what Lane Kiffin cares about with the spreads and all that. I think he's just solely going out there to get the win. It's solely just out there to get the win, make sure your guys stay healthy, and just play the maintenance game the rest of the way out. Because those big games like Tennessee, Alabama, LSU's, all those, you want to make sure you have all your A-plus players out there. And I think going up against Austin Peay, I know you guys had on Mike Griffith yesterday, and he mentioned, you know, Austin Peay's within one score. They're just one little play. And I think that's primarily because of Kirby Smart kind of rotating some guys out there just to keep them healthy.
I also think it's fair to ask the question, is Austin Peay that good that they hung with Georgia and only lost 28-6, or was Georgia looking ahead to Tennessee? And I think
both.
I think both are true. I think Austin Peay's really good. I think that Georgia probably was looking ahead a little bit. And so, because of that, that's where it might scare me, because Kirby's going to go, like, you guys were looking ahead. I expect you to be dialed in this week, you know, against Tennessee in a raucous Knoxville environment.
Do you think Kirby was kind of calling it a little conservative, so you don't give away some of the scheme?
I do.
I think
they were sandbagging a little bit.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. I think this defense, you know, you go back to when, I guess it was Heupel's first year, maybe second year, when Hinton Hooker was there and Georgia, you know, still won that game. I think this is a better Tennessee defense. Now, I think
Agree with that.
Hinton Hooker's a better quarterback than Joey Aguilar, but what I have seen in two games from Joey Aguilar is he can run the offense the way Josh Heupel wants his quarterback to run the offense. Nico could not. I didn't have to say it for a while, so I forgot how to say it. Nico did not. And so I think that gives Tennessee, if they can run the offense the way Heupel wants to run the offense, I think Georgia is going to have their hands full. I'm not saying that they can't beat that, but I think that Kirby knows how difficult that offense is. Nick Saban has talked about it, and I bet he talks about it again tomorrow, about the how difficult it is to defend because it's so up-tempo. And you can't sub defensive guys because they're not subbing out on offense because they're just keeping it going and going and going. And that gives the advantage if you can keep that tempo up. So Kirby knows that, but I do wonder how that can wear down the Georgia defense.
Well, on your point on the Tennessee defense, it's worth noting that as of the injury report that came out last night, Tennessee is going to be without three defensive starters, and that's Jermaud McCoy, Ricky Gibson, and Devin Hobbs.
Yeah.
Those are three defensive starters, and two of them are defensive backs. So your secondary is going to be, you know,
and Kirby's going to
hang on by a thread. I mean, Kirby's a good enough coach to figure that out. And I think Georgia has the receivers, and I like their quarterback and Gunnar Stockton. I think this is the game.
He looks 40.
Yeah.
By the way.
He does. In the face.
He looks 40.
I think this is the game where we kind of figure out, okay, what is Joey Aguilar in a big game? And does he rise to the occasion, or does he kind of just look like another guy? He's looked great so far, in my opinion. Granted, you have played ETSU, who is probably one of the worst programs in all of the country. Maybe they're a good FCS program. I'm not too familiar with them. And Syracuse, who was projected to finish near the bottom of the ACC. Georgia hasn't played anyone either, but I think we're kind of overhyping the volume of play from Joey Aguilar from what we've seen so far. We haven't seen him against real competition.
And that's fair. That is a fair thing to say.
That's just my take.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong. That's why I'm trying to preface it by saying, like, what I've seen in two games, I know the sample size is small, and Kirby's going to try and slow that offense down. But if they can keep that tempo up, then they're going to be in this game. They're going to feed off the crowd, which people that dismiss that doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Oh, that is a thing.
It's a thing, especially
in college.
It's
called Stadium Pulse.
Yep. Ah, there you go, Coach Newt.
There you go.
That's, you know, they need to feed off that in Knoxville. But I'm curious. I'm very curious of how this game is going to go. Quickly, before we get to Trey Wallace, I went on a station in Columbia, South Carolina earlier this week.
Mm.
I think that's going to be a good game, too.
I got a feeling.
I think Vandy goes in there and wins.
I do too. I got a feeling.
Which would be a huge win for Clark Lee in that program.
South Carolina has not looked to the level of play that they've been projected to.
They have not.
Lenore Sellers, I mean, he's a good quarterback. The problem is if you take away his weapons, all he can do is run, and all you got to do is contain the quarterback. So that offense has not looked the way that they're supposed to look. So I could totally see a Vanderbilt sneak attack game and they come out with the win.
Yeah. We will talk to Trey Wallace from Outkick coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe with Connor and Nick in today on 102.5 The Game. The Game here on this Friday, big weekend of college football. And to talk more about that, we say hello to our buddy Trey Wallace from Outkick. Trey, what's up, man?
My man. I'm good, dude. Just getting ready for what is going to be a wild weekend of college football, especially here in Knoxville. I was trying to remember the last time Tennessee and Georgia played this early in the season, but I mean, I might have to have AI help me out here. This is going to be a little interesting.
Well, usually this would be Florida. Like that's what I'm kind of accustomed to. So will you be at Neyland Stadium on Saturday afternoon?
Yep. I'm actually around campus right now, getting a feel of everything. A couple Georgia fans splattered around, game day getting set up. The fraternities are doing their thing, getting their concert stages set up for, I'm sure, some big headliner, a joke, that they'll have after the game. Probably an 80s, an 80s throwback band or 90s throwback band. But, yeah, it's going to be an exciting atmosphere starting tomorrow morning.
Now, I think, you have some strings you could pull, but after the game you should see if somebody could come pick you up and take you up north a little bit to Bristol, because they'll be, of course, running the night race there at Bristol, and you could go see the 23 car. That would be kind of fun.
I'm not going to lie. So I was trying to figure out a way where when Tennessee, Georgia ended, which probably be around 6:45, 7, there was a way to at least get to Bristol for the second half of the race. But then I run into that chance. You know how Bristol is, brother. Like, Tuz could get knocked out on the second lap. So, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. But I am looking forward to that. I'm going to have Bristol somewhere where I can watch besides listening to Freddie Kraft spot for Bubba all Saturday night. I get tired of that.
Yeah, well, who does it? But we love Freddie at the same time.
I know.
Trey, let's start with the piece you had yesterday before we get into football. We knew this, unfortunately, was going to be a part of gambling becoming as prominent as it has. It's legal in many, many states with the apps. And you reported that the NCAA has acknowledged it's investigating 13 athletes at 6 schools for potential gambling activity in college basketball. This has been brewing for over a year. I mean, again, we kind of knew it had a chance to happen. Now it looks like it's a reality.
Yeah, it is, and this is something that's been going on for a while now. The federal government has been looking into that. I got tipped off to it. It was last January, and so I knew that they were digging into a number of schools. So it wasn't just like Fresno State or Temple or those schools that were kind of out there. I had known that it was going to be a lot deeper than that. And when you get the federal government involved and you get these lawyers and attorney generals and whatnot, you know it's big. And I think that there's going to be probably more news that's going to drop on Monday or Tuesday regarding this. And look, it's not good. Like I'm of the belief that players, even if they're in college, like they should be able to bet maybe on like pro sports or something like that. Yep. Like it's hard. It's hard when they're on a field and, there's advertisements running through the stadium for FanDuel or DraftKings or Bet365 or, I mean, whatever it is. Like, how can we tell these players not to do this? But I think the logical thing is, hey, look, you can't bet on the sports you play. You can't bet on, your friends that might play on the basketball team or the baseball team, So make it a professional thing. But I do think this is going to have a ripple effect in college basketball. I think that once everything comes out, and the only reason that the NCAA came out yesterday with that statement and that release is because myself, along with a few other reporters, have been digging so hard. It was like, okay, the NCAA wasn't going to be able to keep these schools' names out of the overall press that comes from it. So they just said, okay, all right, we'll release them all. We'll say the players. But I do think that there's going to be further ramifications down the road, not towards the schools itself, but I think you're going to see some more players involved in this.
Trey, do you ever think it could get to the point to where, obviously, say if you're a college athlete, you have to disclose that you are playing football for XYZ University. And like you mentioned earlier, maybe they were to be able to bet on professional sports. Do you think there's a way they'd be able to disclose that to the, I guess, entity that they're betting with, that they can say, hey, you can bet on this but not that?
There would have to be a separate program that's set up for athletes to be able to gamble. And I'm not going to act like an IT expert, but that is a conversation that I've had with athletic directors and administrators around the country, is that, look, right now you got student athletes that are using their buddies are using family members to set up an account or something like that, and they're either Venmoing or Zelling or PayPaling, whatever, that money, so then they can bet on games. And, you know, or the other thing that athletic director said, it's like, okay, well, you got a roommate, you're slipping $20 to him or something like that in cash. Like, we can't keep up with that. You know what I mean? So I think there will come a time where there will be some kind of software, and there's probably software that's already out there and I just don't know it, or it's ready to be introduced, that will have it where maybe they can track, because they can already track where it's coming from. They can already track the names, the email addresses and whatnot. But if we're going to allow it for athletes, there needs to be a safe way for it to do it, for them not to get caught up in some of the nonsense. And what we've seen right now in college basketball is point shaving, it's prop bets, it's you name it. So maybe one of the things is take away prop bets. Like that's a way to discourage, that's a way to you know, maybe lighten the load a little bit when it comes to gambling with these athletes.
And just making a sharp left turn into actual college football going on this weekend, Tennessee taking on Georgia. You know, looking from the years past when Heupel had Hendon Hooker, it seems with Joey Aguilar being in the mix, he's kind of able to open up that offensive playbook to when Hendon Hooker was there. Do you have that feel to that as well? And what's the one thing that might be holding Tennessee back from being a perennial powerhouse going forward?
I think it's always – even if you look at this game this weekend, it's – you know, I had a hard time, like, picking Tennessee for this one, because it's more or less how I felt before Tennessee played Alabama in 2022, where it's, okay, you're going to have to go out there and prove it before I actually start predicting you to beat these teams. I think with the Georgia situation and how things line up, like, I'll be honest, like, this lines up really well for Tennessee tomorrow. Like it does. I and maybe Georgia comes out and they play like a team that we haven't seen over the last 2 weeks. We didn't see towards the end of last year. And Gunnar Stockton is this guy. But I found it interesting last weekend that Georgia decided to throw the ball over 33 times against Austin Peay, but only scored 28 points. And all that does is tell me that they were just trying to build the confidence of Gunnar Stockton. You look at the other side with Tennessee and Joey Aguilar. I knew from the start that Josh Heupel was going to do whatever it took to get Joey Aguilar rolling. And I mean, throw the ball down the field three or four times in the first half for more than 40 yards. You know, like toss it up, see what happens. Get some momentum building, get some confidence in this guy that you can throw the fade down the sideline or the long post across the middle. Like, so to me, it gets to a point, can Tennessee's offense run at a consistent pace tomorrow that would throw off the Georgia defense? Because at the end of the day, guys, it's still Georgia defense. Now, I know that they're young in the secondary, and I get that part. But I also think, you know, you got Allen Robinson back there. I think the linebackers are about to be fine. They're going to do a lot of things to Joey Aguilar tomorrow, or try to, that's going to throw him off. Well, the good part about it is for Joey Aguilar and Tennessee fans in general and the coaching staff is, he's been in these type of situations before. I mean, he was at him at App State. I know we can't compare App State schedule to, you know, Tennessee or Georgia or whatnot in the SEC, but he's been in big games before. And I think that, to me, is what stands out the most. But if Tennessee's going to win tomorrow, they got to have something out of the offensive line from a protection standpoint running the football. But also at the same time, you got to have guys like Chris Brazell, Mike Matthews, Staley out there. Them getting separation against the Georgia secondary to make Joey Aguilar comfortable.
Talking to Trey Wallace of OutKick, college football reporter. Trey, the other big game in the SEC is later that night, and that's Florida heading to Death Valley to take on LSU. Now, both coaches are kind of coaching for something a little bit more than just a win. Billy Napier and Brian Kelly both kind of coaching for their jobs in a roundabout way. My question is, if Brian Kelly goes out and loses this game to a struggling Billy Napier, what does that mean for the future of LSU, and is that tarnishing to the future of Brian Kelly with the LSU job?
I do. I mean, I think it is. The crazy part about it is Florida has a lot of talent on their football team. And so, like, this rivalry game as well, like, it wouldn't shock me one bit if Florida went in to Baton Rouge and won that game, just based off Florida-LSU alone. But I think at the same time, if Brian Kelly is sitting there at the end of the game and there's a loss when the clock runs down to zero And you have to go with the fact that this is a team you lost to that just got beat by USF the week before. High expectations for everybody. And I'm not, look, one loss is not going to knock them out of the playoffs, but at the same time, it puts them on the clock now. Like, I don't know, how many more losses can you actually afford? And I think when we really break it down, I think LSU should be fine, in my opinion, on offense. Garrett Nussmeier knows what he's doing. He's going to find separation with his wide receivers down the field. I think they're going to be able to run the ball. And I think the biggest thing is the LSU defense is just so different this year and what they're going to be able to do, because I don't think DJ Lagway is healthy. I can't confirm that or anything, but going back and watching film, he's not moving the way that he normally moved, and what I saw last year in those last five games, you know, is his shoulder still dinged up? Probably. The guy is – I think people are also forgetting this about DJ Lagway. He's only practiced for 3.5 weeks against active competition, like since last year. He didn't go through the spring, didn't go through summer workouts in a sense, and even missed, you know, the first week of fall camp, even second week. So, you know, to me, it's – okay, was that a blip last week for Florida? Like, because I think the offense is pretty good, but at the same time, could be this is just the Florida Gators and who they are. And, you know, Brian Kelly loses. Yes, there's going to be a lot of conversation around Brian Kelly, and he better go out and make a run towards a playoff and be in the conversation first week of November. If Billy Napier loses, and it also depends on how he loses, we could be talking about a new Florida Gators, not a new coach, but a new Florida Gators coaching search starting by mid-October.
Well, and I wonder, too, if the guy that beat him last week could be at the top of that list, and Alex Golish, yeah. Because, you know, I mean, he's his stock is rising. My thing with Florida, Trey, is you knew going in the schedule was brutal. Like, they were going to have a tough SEC schedule. The problem now is – he lost to a team he shouldn't have lost to, and he's now wiped away any type of, oh, it's a tough schedule, I think. I think he's lost that.
Well, it's also the other thing. I agree with you 100%. On the Alex Golish thing, too, I think Golish will have options if he keeps this up. He's still got a ways to go, but I think he'll have options. The Florida situation, totally, because you lose a game – that you should have had in the win column that could take some heat if you go to LSU and lose. And then, you know, you got to play Miami. You got to play Texas A&M. You got to play Texas. Don't forget Georgia. Like, this could get out of control pretty quick. And so that's why I'm so interested to see how they bounce back this week. Because if they don't, telling you, like, think, and you already know this, Chase, like, it's going to get hot in Gainesville. And I'm not talking about the weather. I'm talking about the boosters, the Bull Gator Club, the athletic department, the fans. It's going to get a lot worse. So I look at this game, and I'm not saying it's do or die for Billy, but what I am saying is if they lose this one, it just feels like the momentum will continue to see them taking L's, and if that's the case, Florida's going to be looking for a new coach next year.
I'll just say this. I don't know if there's 6 wins on their schedule, but if they do get to that point and he's fired, it's going to be great seeing Steve Spurrier back on the sideline one more time, because that's exactly what I would do.
Well, so you wouldn't go with Bob Stoops coming back to college football?
No, I would. I just for one game, just give me the old ball coach, get the visor out. Like it'd be hilarious. Real quick, I obviously grew up as a Vanderbilt fan. I'm really enjoying what they've done to this point. Obviously, going back to last season, but I find myself whenever anybody asks me about it, I still am kind of tempering expectations. But I do feel pretty good about this weekend and that matchup against South Carolina. What say you?
I'm not going to lie. I think Vanderbilt goes into Columbia and beats South Carolina. I'm not going all crazy on the Clark Lee hype train and Diego thing. I'm just looking at this Vanderbilt squad. What they were going to do in the second half last week, I know it was against Virginia Tech, but guess what? South Carolina played Virginia Tech as well. I haven't seen too terribly much from Lenore Sellers yet this year, and that's okay. He's still got time. But this just feels like a Vanderbilt team that just doesn't give a bleep. Like, they're going to go on the road. They're going to take the hate. They're going to take the naysayers. And they're going to bottle all of that up. Now, I could be completely wrong on Saturday night, Sunday morning, and that's fine. I'll eat crow about it. But I just feel like they got the big win at home. So it's like, and that was last year against Alabama. Can they go do it again? Can they go on the road and beat a ranked South Carolina team that would really propel Vanderbilt for what they're trying to do this year? I'm not saying it's like a playoff run, but I am saying it's like, okay, I could see 8 wins for Vanderbilt. So what? It's going to come down to a lot of how much can Diego stay, you know, either running around the pocket and making plays with his legs, but also finding his receivers. And at the same time, how can you prevent Lenore Sellers from going off? But just looking at it, there's a reason why that line is going down so much before Saturday. I think it started at 8, and now it's down to 3. So yep. I'm fascinated by Saturday night.
Do you think Clark Lee, I mean, I get the sense of however this goes, he wants to stay here. This is his job. This is his dream job. It's where he's from, where he played. But, I mean, what kind of interest do you think there would be in him if they back up last year with another good year this year?
I don't think this is the same situation as James Franklin.
Right.
Where you go to Vanderbilt, you turn the program around, and you're gone. It kind of feels like the same way Alex Golish is with South Florida. You know what I mean? Like, it would take a really good job for Alex Golish to leave South Florida because he could be fighting for a playoff every single year where he's at. I think Clark Lee, he's home, man. Like, he's building a program. And sure, it's going to look different with Diego not there after this season and blah, 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 and that's fine. But you know what? That's why you go out and recruit and you turn a program around. I just don't see him leaving. Like, it would have to be a monster opportunity for him to leave. Like, a monster. I don't see him going to Florida or anything along those lines. I don't think he fits at Florida.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
That's not a shot at Clark. That's just reality. Like, I think there are certain schools that he would fit at. And what he's doing right now with Vanderbilt, I cannot applaud him enough in the Commodores. I love it. I love the excitement in the fan base. I'm going to enjoy seeing, you know, on television, maybe 3,000 Vanderbilt fans in the visiting section in Columbia this weekend. Like, what I'm getting at is he's doing it the right way. He's got the fan base engaged. He's got folks excited. You sold out an opening game of gear against an FCS opponent. Like, keep this up. And I don't think he's leaving Nashville anytime soon.
I tend to agree with you on that. Trey, great stuff as always. Appreciate it. Enjoy Knoxville this weekend. And we'll cheer on the 23 at Bristol as well.
I so appreciate it. Just get in the playoffs. I don't care if he wins or not. Just make sure he's in the playoffs by mid-race. Let's get on to the next round. But you guys have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy NASCAR and college football.
Absolutely. Trey Wallace joining us from Outkick here on the Chase and Big Joe Show. We'll react to some of that. Wrap up hour number two. Coming up next, Chase, Nick, and Connor here on this Friday, 102.5 The Game. Friend of the show, little Vince Gill bringing us back. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. He's Nick Frazier, also known as Dr. Crane, Connor Newt. Always love Vinny. Good stuff. Was this a request by him or you?
No, this is one of my favorite songs.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
I love Vince Gill.
Vince is the man. Well, we'll have to get him on one day when you're
well,
around.
I've talked to him. Frazier and Joe had him on one day, and
oh, that's right.
Him.
Yeah.
At the Omni, I think. That's
at the Omni.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Anyway, I appreciate Trey Wallace for joining the program with some college football. And, of course, you can hear college football all over these airwaves. Tomorrow, our college football game of the week, which will be, I believe, right after you guys here on 102.5 The Game, is Wisconsin, team I saw last week, heads to Alabama to take on the Crimson Tide. I think Alabama, pun intended, rolls all over Wisconsin. They're not very good.
You weren't impressed by them?
I was not impressed at all.
Yeah. I thought when I was watching that game on FS1 that their run game was a little lackluster. And I think that's what kept MTSU in the game primarily.
Vandy takes on South Carolina, coverage beginning at 5 o'clock on 102.5 The Game, so you can hear that. Pitt at West Virginia on 94.9 The Fan starting at 2. And, of course, on Totally Hits 93.3, Big Joe will be on the call with Chip Walters with coverage beginning at 2:30. MTSU at Nevada. So a full day of college football. And then on Sunday, we got the pregame show with Big Joe, Derek, and Chris Sanders live from JBJ's downtown. And then that afternoon, the Eagles and the Chiefs, the Super Bowl rematch on 102.5 The Game starting at 2:45. I think that'll be a fun one.
It will. I think news just broke that Xavier Worthy will not play Sunday.
Oh, so.
Damn it.
Taylor Swift says nice things about him, and Kelsey's
he's
like,
on my fantasy team.
Kelsey's like, I got to take him out.
There was a little malice in that laugh. I think so.
It was evil. Evil laugh, for sure. We'll talk a lot of NFL in the 2 o'clock hour, including more Vince Gill and what the Titans need to do to beat the Rams. It's Chase and Big Joe on this Friday, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, 102.5 The Game.